Hello, friends, and welcome to your Friday edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits and Molecular UK. Rossi, say it with me, Molecular UK. Let's do it phonetically. Molecular.
I don't know, my tongue won't let me. Yeah.
Your Suffolk tongue, as it were. Anyway, friends, we're here to talk about football. That is Molecular UK, are one of our much appreciated and cherished sponsors. So support them if you can. We'll be supporting Ipswich Town this weekend as they host Portsmouth, and we're going to talk about them in due course. But of course, there's some big talking points before we get to that. And I'm going to do that with Rossi, who you've already heard, and the big dog, Stuart Watson. Stewie, how are you?
Very well.
Excellent. I'm back from my sunny Spanish holiday, and I'll talk about that in due course as well, because I'm sure you're all desperate to hear what I made of San Sebastian. But I guess we better start, Stewie, with the big news, which obviously took a little bit longer than we thought it might. It seemed to be a fairly straightforward thing to decide upon, but it wasn't, as ever, in football. We finally found out yesterday lunchtime, just after, wasn't it, that there will indeed be a full replay of Town at Blackburn. But bizarrely, although the result, the game now doesn't exist, Todd Cantwell's goal doesn't exist, Jacob Gree's red card does still exist. Make it make sense.
It's been a bit of a mess, really, hasn't it? To be honest, and this probably all stems from a pretty wishy-washy ruling in the EFL rulebook, which is, well, it's kind of at the EFL's discretion, and a 10-man board will sit down and make a decision, which left it really open to debate. I think it's crazy that both clubs had to kind of put forward their arguments. It seems pretty unnecessary to me. It's pretty clear to everyone what the situation was. It was always going to be a tricky decision, and I guess they took their time because needed to get all their ducks in a row. There could be, with the amount of money at stake in the game today and what this could mean, come close of play at the end of the season, if a point or three for Ipswich, if indeed it happens in the replay, makes a difference. It's not just Blackburn whose nose is going to get put out of joint. It could be potentially several others as well. So might not be the end of this yet. Blackburn have already put out a statement saying they're looking into it, and they're looking at their potential right to put in an appeal. Personally, I'm not sure that they'll get them anywhere, but we'll have to wait and see. But I think we're all in agreement here, and it's easy for us to say, looking through Ipswich lenses, that the right decision has been made, I think.
Yeah, I mean, from a Blackburn point of view, you can kind of understand why they would be frustrated, given the game state. And it's probably worth just reflecting on what they've said. Valerian Ismail said earlier this week that awarding Blackburn the win would be the fairest thing to do, which, you know, big shout, couldn't see that happening. And then, as you say, Stu, they put out a statement in the wake of the judgment yesterday that said, whilst Blackburn Rovers respects the processes undertaken by the EFL and acknowledges the complexities involved, the club is extremely disappointed by the outcome, which fails to take into account the significant advantages Rovers held at the time of abandonment. Blackburn Rovers is committed to upholding the integrity of the competition. However, we strongly feel that the decision to replay the entire fixture does not accurately reflect the circumstances on the day. The club is now seeking further clarity from the EFL and will consider all options, including the right to appeal the decision, and will make no further comment at this stage. So it does feel like, Rossi, that we may not have heard the end of this yet.
Yeah, well, you say in football, it always happens. It takes so long to decide a decision, and then when it's decided, then there's always one party going, we're not happy with that, let's appeal it. But yeah, I'm pleased they haven't gone down the route of playing 10 minutes, because that would just been a ridiculous option. I don't know how they would have done that. Barely for either side. But obviously, if the shoe was on the other foot, obviously I'm sure Dear Town will be pushing, like, yeah, we want the win. But yeah, it's an interesting one. And I've seen that there's been other incidents, like in the National League. Obviously, that's a different, you know, football body. But I think it was like Scunthorpe. They played Eastleigh, and there's like an injury in like the 90-plus minute. So like basically the last kickings of the game, and then obviously they had to abandon the game, and then they had to play it all over again. So yeah, it's an interesting situation, but I'm pleased they've gone down the route of play the replay, although it does mean we've got to go back to Blackburn, but it is what it is.
Yeah. See, I suppose the real problem this is highlighted is there's not really any kind of clarity around the rules. It needs to be a lot kind of more set in stone, I guess, in this scenario.
Yeah, and I think the EFL statement has kind of acknowledged that they're now going to work with member clubs to perhaps work on the wording of the rulings and having something a bit more set in stone, so that if this pretty rare scenario ever rears its head again, that there's not this kind of period of days of debate and what's fair and what's right and somebody kind of making a decision. I mean, the extra wrinkle here, of course, was that there's three championship board directors on the EFL board. Mark Ashton has obviously been one of those in the past when he was at Bristol City. They get voted on. So there's members, club members from each of the divisions. And they decided to abstain because obviously there was a feeling of conflict of interest. One of those, of course, was Zoe Webber at Norwich. One was Peter Risdale at Preston, just up the road from Blackburn as well. Neil Bowser at Middlesbrough as well, who are at the top end of the table and maybe seeing Ipswich as promotion rivals. So they obviously felt that, you know, it was right for them to abstain. So then that takes it down to a 7-person vote there. We don't know the breakdown. All we know is it was a majority. Whether that was a split vote, we don't know. Somebody was going to be upset by this decision. And I think ultimately just when it was also up in the air, nobody was going to be happy. I think just reset and replay for the reasons that we outlined earlier in the week was the correct call. It's stroke of luck for Ipswich, and they've now got to kind of make the most of that. But it's going to be an interesting atmosphere on that return to Ewood Park, whenever that may be.
Yeah, you're looking forward to that, Rossi. Me and Sue were looking at the schedule yesterday. The fixtures, sorry, I went very American by saying schedule there. The fixtures, it looks like that the first earliest opportunity it could be would be, I think, the week starting October 27th. So a nice little trip up to Blackburn, which, Stu, you were saying coincides with your week off, which you were sort of, although not too happy that you're going to miss the game because of the atmosphere and the kind of extra spice that may be generated by that fixture. Ross, are you looking forward to getting back up there?
I want us to make sure the forecast is fine that evening.
We're not travelling if it's raining, yeah.
Pretty much. And as you may hear, I've got the sniffles. So, I'm hoping it's just better weather and we do have a 90 minutes of football being played. But I don't mind Ewood Park, though. It's not a bad, you know, grounds. I know it's a bit far, but it's not a bad little setup. And I've got some good pictures. So, ideally,
word of advice for us, take a spare set of clothes this time. Yes. If the forecast is wet, sitting in some wet clothes for a 5-hour journey home is not great for your health.
I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
Yeah, the forecast was a bit 50-50, to be fair. Yeah. I'm just cough, yellow weather warning.
Yeah. I'm just pleased you remembered a coat, Ross. That's progress. I also think the sniffles you are now suffering is a direct result of that game. So surely there should be some leeway, some compo coming your way, shouldn't there? From Blackburn or the EFL?
Venkies.
You're in harm's way at their ground. Anyway, friends, so the game is going to be replayed, we think, maybe end of October, perhaps. I think we all agree the right decision has been reached. So you look like you want to have the final.
I'm just saying on the atmosphere of the day, obviously Blackburn fans are going to be bang up for it. Rightly so. And there's already talk, I think, of Ipswich fans maybe bringing goggles and inflatables and brollies and all that sort of rubber rings and stuff like that. I'm all up for that.
Yeah, it should be good. Let's see what happens when that game is replayed. Right, then the other sort of main talking point before we get to Pompey this week has been something that you've been chasing, Stu. It's yet to be really confirmed by anyone solidly, but an eye-raising story out of Kuwait, and that's that Sam Morsy has apparently left Kuwait FC by mutual consent after just 3 games, with his most recent and indeed perhaps final game seeing him be sent off. Now, clearly, this is a really interesting story, given the fact that Town let him go for no fee. This is a life-changing opportunity for him. And if reports are to be believed, and as I say, you are chasing the truth of it, it may have already ended.
Yeah, first thing to say is we haven't reported on it yet because we've not been able to kind of multi-source this ourselves. So holding fire on that. It's based on a report at the moment from a Kuwaiti TV station that's, you know, a proper media outlet. So no reason to believe it's not the truth. But once we can kind of properly firm it up, we will. Three games in to life in Kuwait. As you say, a red card in the first half at the weekend. We did kind of discuss this, didn't we, when he moved to Kuwait, that we understood that life-changing money for someone who's kind of climbed the pyramid. Obviously, culturally, he felt, you know, that was important to him as well with his religion. But it didn't take a genius to work out that it probably wasn't going to scratch the competitive itch in Sam Morsi playing. It's not even Saudi where you're coming up against some big name players. It's Kuwait. So, if indeed he has come to the end of his time there, where does he end up next is the question. He'd become a free agent if his contract has come to a mutually agreed termination. I would imagine a return to England. Yeah, two big questions. Are Ipswich interested in bringing him back? And if not, could he rock up at a championship rival? Do you want me to take each of those questions in turn?
Well, I do. I know. Clearly, we're jumping several steps ahead here with the story yet to be officially confirmed. But it's fun to talk about, isn't it? I mean, clearly, the conversation as to whether Town would consider bringing him back is the first chat. You got some breaking news there, Stu? No?
No.
Excellent.
Club call, but I think it can wait.
It's okay, fine. Cool. So, first of all, should we do the should Town be interested? Would Town be interested in bringing him back?
Personally, I don't see it. I don't see it happening. I think there was a parting of the ways for a reason. In the summer, Ipswich didn't race to offer Sam a new contract. They did eventually. Took a bit of kind of to-ing and fro-ing about the length of the contract, obviously with Sam now being 33, I think, would be 34 coming
almost
up next.
34, yeah.
And I think ultimately Ipswich are kind of having to have at least half an eye on the future, and that they've gone through this reset. And I think when you're trying to build a new culture at a football club, is it particularly healthy to have the man who was front and centre all of that still kind of hanging around? But kind of, for me, Sam Morsi is an all or nothing character. He's either the captain, heartbeat of the side, leading everything. I'm not sure it would particularly work for him coming in to be kind of back up to Azor Matasiwa, who Ipswich now have to really kind of invest in to be the sort of the man that leads things forward. So for those reasons, I'm not sure, yeah, unless suddenly Azor Matasiwa suffered a really bad injury, then that could suddenly change things. But I can't see Ipswich or Sam Morsi kind of falling over themselves for an instant reunion. I might be wrong. And then the next question is the one of, you know, if he doesn't go to Ipswich, there'll be a lot of championship football clubs interested in taking him. And this isn't being, again, smart with hindsight. I said this in the summer. It's all very well Ipswich having a gentleman's agreement to say, look, it's a big opportunity for you. We won't take a transfer fee. But I think I really hope they were smart enough to put some sort of clause in there to say that, you know, if it doesn't work out in Kuwait, and there was always a very strong chance it wouldn't, that there is a period of time, 6 months, a year, where you can't sign for another championship club, because that could leave Ipswich a bit of egg on their face, couldn't it, if he rocks up somewhere else and, upsets the season in some way.
It really would stick in the craw, wouldn't it? Because you imagine there'd be sort of top-end championship sides looking at bringing him in if possible. Rossi, if and when Morsi is available to sign as a free agent, there will obviously be some emotional connection to the idea of bringing him back. But as Stu says there, that there is literally the guy that was signed to replace him is now playing his role in the side, wearing his shirt as well, his shirt number. But is there any argument? Because one of the things we talked about post-transfer window is that there is no obvious backup for Matasiwa in the side. Now, he appears to be bulletproof at the moment, but should he go down or get banned or whatever, there is no obvious person to step in and take that place. And in that scenario, who better to step in than the guy who made that role his own in the first place?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I know there's a lot of Town fans out there, like they're saying straight away, bring him back. Amount of like Town fans I've bumped into the last few days. Hopefully I haven't given you my cold. Hope you're fine. Let me know if you are fine. My voice cracked there. Yeah, it is a very interesting one. And I think, yeah, as Stu mentioned, I do hope there was a clause in that contract or that discussion. Because, yeah, what if he rocks up at a promotion rival and goes and scores, you know, a goal or was crucial to their promotion push? That would be, yeah, as Stu said, egg on our face. So, he could become the saviour, you know, come back, you know, does like the Massimo Luongo sort of role. You know, signs in the January and then, yeah, boom, get us promoted. So, yeah, it's a weird situation. I know there's a lot of, fans who have got that story of Sam Morsy, you know, captain, back-to-back promotion. But now we've got this new heroes. I think Stu's done a great piece this morning about, you know, time for new heroes and stuff. Obviously, some players struggled at first, but as all matters to see was the new number five. And I think we've got to back the current crop. And, we'll see what happens with Morsy.
He'll be a free agent. So if you think back to when Ipswich signed Axel Tuanzebe, that was after the window shut. He was a free agent. They were able to sign him and register him. So I'm assuming on that basis, he would be able to sign and play as a free agent straight away. Obviously, you have to have space in your squad. Ipswich have filled their 25-man squad. So when they signed Axel, from memory, they left a slot free for him. So I don't know if you could then deregister a player in order to make room for a free agent. I'd be surprised if that was the case. So even if Ipswich did want him, I don't think they'd be able to sign him and register him before the January transfer window. Again, I need to check on that. But other clubs, I need to have a look through who maybe didn't use their full 25-man quota, who needs a midfielder. You could probably start to narrow it down to his options. And then maybe, you know, does Sam just take a few months? I mean, it won't be long before January comes. Maybe he keeps his options open. Depends how gagging he is to sort of play football immediately and get straight back into the fold. I don't know.
I don't want it to happen. I don't want to see Sam Morsy sign for a rival and then play against Town. But part of me kind of does want to see it happen, if you know what I mean. I'd like to see Sam versus Azor in midfield. I think that would be a particularly pay-per-view matchup, given we know that Sam plays with an edge and obviously Azor is a physical player. I think that could be quite good. That could be quite good TV. Hopefully it doesn't happen, but we'll see. Friends, should we move on? It is worth reflecting, actually, Ross. You make a good point there. Stu's written a nice piece this morning around something. I think you first touched on the pod earlier this week about the kind of need to get behind the new blood at Town. And it's probably worth you just talking about that a little bit, Stu, because it is an interesting point. It was kind of sparked by what you said on the pod around Jacob Greaves and Cameron Burgess, and I guess inevitably a little bit of rose-tinted or blue-tinted glasses in this case about how those players who became part of the club folklore initially, quite a few of them struggled, and it took time for them to get going and roll in becoming this winning machine that we got used to.
Yeah. Full disclosure, we were struggling to come up with some ideas for the news cycle, the quiet part of the week for this morning, and you picked up on some of the comments around sort of a little bit of the criticism that Jacob Greaves is receiving after his red card and a couple of other incidents this season, the penalty at Preston, etc. And immediately, it's not just Jacob Greaves made a mistake. Cameron Burgess wouldn't have done that. And I don't want to say this too flippantly, but people like Cameron Burgess have now suddenly been elevated to like Maldini status in people's minds. And again, Sam Morsy, we're talking, you know, as if he just taken him to, you're always a better player out of the team. You're always a better player with hindsight, aren't you? And look, I don't want to take anything away at all from that crop of players because they are bona fide club legends now, sort of modern club legends. I know it's all relative, but they're in club folklore. What they did will hopefully leave a legacy. But football moves on, and there's an argument that Ipswich had their tried and trusted formula, and they had a team that had done it before and had gone through all of these experiences. You know, they could have gone again, but it didn't work out that way. And I don't think it's particularly healthy that every time Greaves does something, we immediately Burgess's name follows in the next breath. And likewise with other players throughout the team, that's kind of my feeling around it. And you know, I mentioned it, Burgess had a difficult sort of first 12 to 18 months. There's various examples that we can throw up, but Sam Morsi's the same. Sam Morsi admits that it took him months to get his head around dropping down from Middlesbrough in the Championship to Ipswich in League One. And, you know, it was fairly deep into his career where he was arguing with fans at Bristol Rovers on Valentine's Day night, 0-0, midway through the League One promotion season. Leif Davis had a poor debut, gave a penalty away against Bolton, fairly jet-lagged that day, I remember. We talk about it all the time, don't we? There's so many examples of players that just took a little bit of time to find their feet. So for me, it's far, far too early to be making any kind of judgments on these players individually or collectively at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, and I think as the point you made in the piece is worth reflecting on, not just in this particular debate, Stewie, but in society as a whole, that it's okay to kind of be in the middle somewhere. It doesn't have to be so polarized and at odds all the time. You know, you can actually just sit in the middle and take some time to decide, you know, the sensible route as opposed to this extremes.
Yeah, and I know that leaves you exposed to kind of accusations of fence sitting or being too scared to have an opinion, but I actually think sometimes it's braver to just take a beat and assess things a little bit. In this day and age, we're too quick. Everyone's too quick, whether it's politics, whatever part of society, you have to have a really strong opinion and now your collar's to the mast. Even if you're honest, you probably don't have enough information at your disposal to really kind of make that decision. You feel pressured to sort of to say that. So for me, we're in a little period now where it's fine to be slightly anxious about change, understandably so, trying to keep your glass half full mentality, because if not, what's the point in being in a football fan? We obviously have a role sort of to be a little bit more independent and take a step back and assess things. And if things don't work out, if things go really horribly wrong, we'll be there to certainly voice that opinion at the correct juncture. It's certainly not that now. It's way, way too early.
Which brings us perfectly to the juncture of this weekend and the start of another huge week for Ipswich Town. Three games in a week, culminating with the derby. And you know, what a potential opportunity that would be for liftoff the week ahead. Starts with Portsmouth. Rossi, you've been getting some insight onto Pompey. They've had an up and down start. Down in terms of the last game because they lost at home to Sheffield Wednesday, who we know are in all sorts of bother. So what kind of insight can you give us, first of all, on Portsmouth before we start talking about the Blues?
I'm beating on the road, though, this year in the league. So the games they've played, I know they drew last time out against Southampton in the derby for them. Obviously, Connor Chaplin won't be, he'll be ineligible to play for this game. A familiar name in their squad, Andre Dazelle, who is getting a lot of rave reviews. There was a bit of like question marks when he first signed as a free agent last summer, and he's been incredible from what, you know, the Pompey fans have been saying. So he's definitely a player to watch out for at Portman Road. I'm sure the reception will be fine. I think he has returned to Portman Road since he obviously got sold back in 2021. But yeah, they're a team that they're not going to be afraid to turn up and play football. They're not going to be, well, it depends on the game, how it goes, but from the insight I got, they are going to come and play. They're not going to put 10 men behind the ball and try to defend for their lives. They're really going to go for it. You know, John Messinio is a manager that is now a bit of a, I wouldn't say an icon at Portsmouth, but he's like their sort of saviour, you know, from getting them, you know, back to the Championship after so many years away. They are a good footballing side, but they do have injuries and they've got a weird goalkeeper situation at the moment. I think that will be a big discussion point for Portsmouth's point of view. But yeah, good to see Andre doing well.
Yeah, John Mourinho is one that I have a blind spot on. I'm always writing it John Mourinho. It's like a, what was yours, Stu? The Mark Warburton, Sam Warburton.
Yeah.
It's certain players or managers that you get little blind spots with, and I can't write John Mourinho. It's always John Mourinho for some reason.
It's the Pro Evolution Soccer version of Jose, exactly. Isn't it? Yeah.
Siri, Rossi pointed to injuries there. That's certainly a conversation for Pompey going into this game. I see that they've got quite a few people, including their first choice goalkeeper, potentially missing or definitely missing.
Yeah, good time to face him, I think. I think their starting 11, when everyone's fit, will be fine to achieve their goal of just consolidating, staying in the division again. Finished 16th last year. Really good home form, really poor away form last year, interestingly. As Ross touched upon it, they've had some okay results on the road this time around, so I don't know if they've managed to kind of shake that tag off. But injury-wise, they've got some key players out. The goalkeeper you've mentioned, Nicholas Schmidt, fractured his hand in that derby against Southampton recently. The backup to him, Killip, came in last weekend against Sheffield Wednesday and by all accounts looked a little bit shaky. So I don't know if that's something Ipswich can prey on. Centre-half Connor Shaughnessy, an important player for them, pulled up lame with a hamstring for one of Sheffield Wednesday's goals, just turned and pushed off and just pulled up. So he'll be out. He's a massive blow. And then the three sort of first-choice players in behind the striker are potentially all out. Jacob Murphy on the left wing, former Norwich, was their player of the year last year, missed out against Sheffield Wednesday with an ankle injury. Don't think there's been any kind of update on him yet, but the feeling looking at reports was without him in the side, their attack is very much blunted. They lose a major creative spark there, so we'll see if he plays. Chaplin, as Ross mentioned, in the number 10 role, ineligible to face his parent club, of course. And then Callum Lang on the right wing. He suffered a hamstring injury, I think, in the Norwich game earlier in the season. And that was described as a major blow by the manager. So that's some key players there that are, you know, unavailable, potentially unavailable for this game. So decent time to face them. I guess on the flip side, beware the wounded animal. They were going along quite nicely, got grinded out that 0-0 draw against Southampton. And then they lost 2-0 to Sheffield Wednesday. And Messinho pulled no punches, talked about them being awful for 90 minutes. Pretty much accused his players of being complacent after getting themselves up for the derby and then sinking to that defeat. So he'll certainly be looking for a reaction from his players in this one.
Mm. Let's talk about Town then, Stu. Who might play, who might not play. Now, we know Jacob Greaves isn't going to play, so one assumes that Big Cedric is going to come in for his league debut. Also, having read your predicted 11, which goes out online at 12 o'clock today, so if you want to have a look at what who Stu thinks might play, there's one kind of big call in there, which may raise a few eyebrows. Shall we talk about who you think or who you would play for this game?
Yeah, obviously one enforced change with Kipre in for Greaves, mm-hmm. at centre-halves. I think there'll be at least one kind of wince, peek through your fingers challenge from Cedric Kipre from everything I've read about him and what I've seen on the pitch so far. But that'll be interesting. The door's ajar for him now, isn't it? He can play a bit as well. Mm. No stranger to that sort of left-sided centre-half role, so we'll see how he does. But midfield, it was an unchanged team up at Blackburn. Will it be unchanged again beyond that centre-half situation? There's a three-game week coming up now with a trip to Bristol City away, followed by the derby against Norwich. McKenna's going to rotate at some stage. Will it be this weekend with Bristol Rovers in mind? The one area that I think that rotation will come inevitably at some point is in midfield, and it will be with Jens Kajusta, because Jens Kajusta's knee management is well publicised. No point taking any unnecessary risks with him. So McKenna needs to think about which players are best suited to the game stylistically. A home game against Portsmouth, where Ipswich are going to be the favourites, be expected to have lots of the ball, maybe at times be facing a low block and having to break things down. Is the technical talents of Marcelino Nunez, is this the right time to unleash him? Possibly. It's a really hard call. I've stuck him in my predicted 11 just for a matter of fun and debate, really, I think, more than anything.
It would be interesting to see him from the start, wouldn't it? I mean, obviously Jens has been class and is class and will continue to be class, but it would be nice to see Nunes start perhaps, and maybe a good game for him. Rossi, have you got any other thoughts on the starting 11? I guess there's a debate on the right, as always, around McAteer and when we're going to see a Geli from the start, and then Akpom and Smodic in the 10. Any thoughts on that?
No, I think everything else is pretty set in stone at the moment. Yeah, Nunes is an interesting one because you want to start him against Norwich, don't you? So you want to get him up to speed. So maybe he plays Saturday, rest him for Tuesday night at Bristol, and then start him for the derby. That would be very tasty indeed. But yeah, it's a headache in a way for McKenna because, yeah, if there's players who are botting at the bit to want to start, especially, you know, the game's coming up. We've got a three-game week. That, you know, players will know they've got an opportunity to play. But yeah, it'd be good to see Nunes from the start because, yeah, he's obviously made one sub appearance, looked lively when he came on against Sheffield United. So yeah, it'd be good to see him from the start, see what he does. But yeah, in my mind, I know we're going too ahead of myself now, but for the derby, I think you've got to start him for that one. Because
that's how McKenna has to think, doesn't he? He needs to start when you come into these three game weeks. You need to start thinking about a little bit of the next game or two ahead. And that's why they've got the squad, they built the squad that they have with two players for every position virtually. Hopefully it's an easier sell because they've got different qualities in each of these positions. Nunez and Kajusta are two completely different players in the way they play the position. Nunez is an out-and-out playmaker. He's a technician. He can pick a pass. He's full of energy. Kajusta is a bit more kind of vertical in his play. He's a ball carrier. And so when you sit down with a player and you explain, look, you've not been dropped. I've got you in mind. I've got you in mind for Tuesday night. You're going to be perfect for that game. And you almost make them feel good about being dropped. And the same can be said of kind of McAteer, straight line runner, pace versus Igeli, tricky dribbler, powerful shot, likes to cut inside. And there's different options for each position. And it's just kind of figuring the right blend for each game.
Mm. Right then, let's do predictions, shall we? I think, are you still leading the way on predictions, Rossi? Because obviously last weekend's game was null and void. I think all of us would have got it wrong anyway. So let's start with you then. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I just want to quickly put a point of order. Stu was just interested to sort of let me know about, he wanted a score review, which I did do. It's gone to VAR and it was correct. So, yeah, I'm currently on 5 points. Heafy, second place with 4 points. AJ and Stu, joint bottom, the sports writers and all that, who should know their stuff, currently bottom. So, although that can easily change this weekend if they get a correct result, but we shall see. But yeah, still early days, but top of the lead.
Let's not mention to Alex that he's bottom because, you know, he doesn't take these things very seriously. So it's probably not worth mentioning it. Prediction wise then, Ross, give us a prediction.
I'm going to go with my scoreline of choice. I think I've gone for this pretty much so far, which you can sort of say boring, but I'm going to go 2-1. I was going to go 2-0, but I thought
boring.
2-1.
Yeah. Who's your score first?
First goal scorer. Oh, do I play it safe? Because I want to obviously keep my top of the lead. Who will score goals? Goal scorer. Can't think of a goal scorer. Why can't I think of somebody who plays for Ipswich Town? I'm going to go for George Hurst. There we go.
Matt boring.
Okay, so you go 2-1, George Hurst. Stewie, I already know what you're going to say because I've read your preview and I like it. So I'm going to get in first and say, I'm going to say 2-0 Ipswich Town. I'm going to say Tuber Akpom, which probably means he won't start. Who are you saying? What are you saying?
I'll take your 2-0 and I'll raise it. I'll say 3-0, which is quite bold because Portsmouth haven't conceded many goals at all this season, 5 in their 6 games. But it's that injury situation that I've outlined that gives me a bit of hope, plus the fact that Ipswich are back at Portman Road, where they won 5-0 last time out, of course, let's not forget. So 3-0 is my scoreline. I wanted to say Akpom as well. He's the one I had in mind. but I think it's more fun if we go with different players.
Your call, mate.
On that basis alone, I will say first goal scorer is going to be Nunez delivering a free kick / corner, which is headed into the back of the net by Dara O'Shea.
Oh, lovely there stuff. There you go. Piece goal as well. Okay, so 2-1 Hurst, Rossi, me 2-0 Akpom, Stewie 3-0 Dara O'Shea, which if that comes to pass, that'd be tremendous. You deservedly get all the points for that. Right then, friends. As we come to the end of this podcast, who wants to hear about my holiday in San Sebastian?
Me.
Hey! Well, it was tremendous, friends, and I can highly recommend San Sebastian. It's a beautiful city, incredible food, great culture. As always, when one goes to Europe, you get home and you think, oh, get back to the village and someone's painted a bloody cross of St. George on the mini roundabout in the village, and you think, oh, God, what am I doing? This place. But Spain is tremendous. Pinchos culture, brilliant. Basically just go bar to bar. They've all got their own specialities. And you just kind of stand at the bar. There's no sitting down, really. Stand at the bar, get your elbows out. Everyone's having a good time. All in good fun. And also, friends, I want to highlight that I achieved an airport PB, Stu and Ross. I don't know. You can tell me if this makes me odd. My wife definitely thinks it does. But you know when you land, and everyone immediately gets up and it's like a competition so you can get up first, even though there's no point. That's nonsense. I don't get involved in that. But soon as the doors are open and you're allowed off the plane, that then is my signal for the race to the carousel. I, again, travel rules, always book extra leg room, never use the escalator, always go up the stairs and never get on those ridiculous slidey walkways. Just speed walk past those losers. And for the first time in history, I got to the baggage carousel first out of everyone on the plane, which makes me the best human being alive. Unfortunately, I then had to wait about 25 minutes while they opened the baggage carousel. My wife eventually caught up to me and called me all sorts of names for leaving her behind, just knocking people out of the way, get the kids out of the way. They shouldn't even be in the airport, losers. So, yeah, does that make me odd?
I think it's important to have these little kind of mini games in your life, isn't it? Sometimes when you find yourself in a kind of a race that's not a race with a stranger, like a walking race in the street sort of thing.
Everything's a race, mate. Everything's a competition.
Yeah. If it added a little bit of fun to your day, then I'm all for it. I'm not sure what you were quite achieving by getting there first, but has this always been a thing? How many years in the making has this been?
This is something I've never achieved before. I've never managed this.
But always tried it.
Always, because normally, obviously, I'm at the back of the plane. This time, because we're on a smaller airliner, Vueling, first time I've flown with them, we were towards the front because we reserved extra legroom, as you always have to do, the rules of travel from Heath, which meant we got off slightly earlier than the other losers at the back of the plane. And as I say, like, I don't know why people use escalators. Just go upstairs two at a time. Why do people get on that slidey thing when you can just walk fast? Lazy people.
I'm split on that. Stairs over the cramped kind of escalators when you've been sat on a plane for however many hours, agreed. Yeah. Slidey walkway things, I'm in. They're fun. You don't get to use them every day.
They make me feel a bit seasick as well, because from as soon as you get off them, you think you're still on them. And I find that my body struggles to then compensate for it. So I'd much rather speed walk past them, making eye contact with every single one of them on there so they know that I'm better than
I don't think you can speed walk past them.
I can. I
think they're too fast.
I've done it, mate. No, I've done it. I did it this weekend. Absolutely smashed them. And I looked at every single one of them in the eye so they knew that I was better than each and every single one of them. Jokers. Anyway, it feels like a good place to end with me being the king of the world. Yeah. I just want to shout out before we leave, which does relate to travel, one of our regular listeners and indeed, I think, attendee at KOA Live 2, who sent me a message all the way from Australia, Joe Doggett. Who sent me a picture of him in Australia wearing the KOA Kings of Anglia best-selling trucker hat and a beautiful vista behind him. He's out there for a little bit in Australia. So have a great time out there, Joe. Thanks for your support of the show. It also made me wonder, what's the furthest afield we can see some KOA merch? There we go. I believe that is that's the snapback. That's also a good seller, the multicolored snapback. Obviously, go online. Get yourself some KOA merch. good value clobber.
As not Joe the best model.
Well, I think there's a certain appeal to you, friend. Joe, have a great time. Thanks for your message, and thanks for taking KOA Global. It made me think, though, what's the furthest afield we can see some KOA merch? If you've got KOA merch further afield or as far afield as Australia, send me some pictures and let us know, and we'll give you a shout-out on the pod. Obviously, you can go and get all that merch via various links. There should be a link in this very pod description, indeed, to go and get yourself some KOA merch. And also a reminder, obviously, to support our sponsors, use the code KOA to get 20% off at stardustspirits.co.uk. All their excellent alcoholic beverages on there. And our new sponsor, another Suffolk sponsor, please support them, Molecular UK. Rossi, who are they?
They do great cleaning products. That's all
they
got do.
But what are they called, Ross?
I hope they don't listen to it. I mean, they will, because obviously I'm sure they support the podcast. But when they hear this and they go, why are we sponsoring this podcast? One of them can't even
great exposure.
Say their names. Yeah.
It's great exposure.
I don't know. It's become a game now.
Absolutely.
Know?
When will Rossi finally be able to pronounce Molecular? When will Rossi finally pass his driving test? Which one's going to happen first? Who knows? It's going to be exciting to find out. But anyway, can you visit their website, which is www.molecular-uk.com. Use the code KOA10 for 10% off all their products. As Rossi says, they do some tremendous cleaning products for your car and other things. I'm still waiting to get my hands on some of their products so I can then do my alloys and clean the inside of my car, that kind of stuff. But if you can support them, that'd be great. Also, friends, a reminder that our Blue Era, our new town magazine, which reflects on the rebirth of Ipswich Town, the first time we've had all that kind of stuff in the same place, how we covered the rise from the market, the end of the Marcus Evans era, all the way through the takeover, Demolition Man summer, and all the way through promotion and everything that's happened since. That is now in the shops. You can get your hands on that for £9.99. Sit that next to Mission Impossible on your Ipswich Town bookshelf. Friends, anything else to mention? Rossi? Oh, Stewie? Go on.
I was just going to say, you mentioning about New Blue Era, one of the pieces in there is the interview I did with Jason Schechterly, one of the most favourite things I've probably done during my time, because he's just such an inspirational man, and it was a real honour watching one of his speeches. He's been over in town again. He makes these regular flying visits over. Obviously, a lot of new players to hear the running towards adversity speech, and who better to deliver it than Jason? So it's great to see some pictures of Ashley Young and others meeting Jason and listening to Jason, the women's team as well, all the staff behind the scenes. So hopefully that's given everyone an extra bit of a boost going into a big old week for Ipswich Town.
Absolutely. Ross, anything from you?
Just linking up with the women's team, actually. They've got a double header this weekend. It's a double header for the club, because it's Portsmouth coming to obviously Portman Road for the men, and then the women's team play Portsmouth at the Colchester Stadium. So a Pompey double header for Ipswich Town.
Absolutely. A great weekend in store, hopefully two wins. Friends, also, it'd be nice if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, just because they're good for our fragile egos, mainly mine, and also helps us lift us visibility-wise in the charts. We've not had one of those for a while, so if you do enjoy the show and want to leave us a review and help us be seen by more people, attract more people to the KOA Army, that'd be great if you could leave us a review. Right then, friends, we're going to wrap things up. It's been a shorter than normal pod today, mainly because AJ's not been here, so we've not had someone weighing on for 5 minutes at a time about XG. But we're building up, obviously, to Pompey. Stu's off to the presses this afternoon, so follow those with us. Follow the game all with us if you're not going to be there tomorrow. And then join us back here on Monday, friends, for the start of a massive week. Derby week, building up to the derby via, annoyingly, Bristol City. But it's still Derby week. So there's a lot to talk about. Hopefully we're talking about a win for Town against Pompey as well. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you next time.